of cream, red roses too.
This is Ed Cohen, your host of Global Radio Talk Show, coming to you today from Old Town in San Diego. We have a very special guest today, an author of a book called Standing Ovation Presentations. Knowing Your Actor Type Holds a Secret to Stellar Communication. Let's say hello to Robin Hatcher. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for being with us. You have a lot of experience in presentations, and currently you're offering public speaking training in a variety of formats. You are a workshop presenter, and you give coaching with a company called Speak, etc. And you, of course, do keynotes as well. So Standing Ovation Presentations, what's that all about? Why did you write it?
I wrote this book because I was teaching public speaking in the college setting for a while, and I would look at some of the books, and nothing spoke to me because I believe that they were all trying to teach a one-size-fits-all type of presenting and communicating. And I saw from my hands-on experience, from my own personal experience, that people, we all come in so many different types and styles, and one style could be extremely effective for one person and not as effective for the other person. And we as listeners and viewers and participants know when someone is being more authentic and not, and we have this sixth sense about it. So what I wanted to do was create a book that cherishes your strength, your individual strengths, and highlights those strengths so that you can be the best you that you can be and then consequently become a stellar presenter as you are.
Okay, so tell us about actor types. It sounds provocative. So what's it about?
Yeah, the actor types are based on characters and types that you see in movies and television every day. And I spent many, many years as a working professional actor. And one of the things that I noticed is to be successful, one of the more successful actors are the ones that play true to type. When I was growing up in the acting world, people would say, oh, I can do that role, I can do that role, I can do that. Why is she getting that audition and I'm not? The fact of the matter is when I looked around at these people and I looked in myself, it's like we can't do everything. There are very few Meryl Streeps out there. And so what I did in this my book is create 9 different types. I started seeing when I started the different types that people fall into. We have the buddy type. We have the hero. And people think that they need to be the hero, but you don't. The villain even can be a really enticing, charismatic type to present from. And then we have the supermodel sex symbol type. We have a curmudgeon. And we have the ingenue and the comic and the superhero, which is different from the hero. So I discovered that when you can really hone in to where your strengths lie, then you have that answer to how you can present yourself more effectively.
What's the villain? Tell me about the villain.
Ha ha! The villain is the dark side of the hero, you know. So when a hero walks in the room, most people's eyes go, they're very charismatic. When the villain walks into the room, yes, the same thing happens. People look up and they have that charisma, but the response that they get is like, do I go forward or do I? I mean, it's a little scary. People like to be, I mean, why are funhouses so popular? People like to be a little scared, a little apprehensive. That's what a villain can do to you, that they can make you sit up straight and think, wow, I don't know what to do with this person. And I discovered some really amazing villain presenters because villains don't move as much as other people. They don't need to gesture. They don't have that need to gesture at all. All their power is very contained. They have a very wry sense of humor and wit, and so dry sometimes that you're not quite sure whether they're being mean or they're being funny. And that can really work towards you. Of course, what I do in the book is I illustrate that every actor type, no matter how wonderful their strengths are, they all have several fatal flaws that you need to be careful of, you need to mitigate in order to be successful. And of course, the villain's fatal flaw is sometimes they can be so super intimidating or come off as so mean that nobody wants to be around them.
But a lot of people don't know who they are, what they are. Well, they think they are, but maybe someone thinks differently. It's really not that way, Ed.
Right.
So you have a test, don't you?
Yes. I have a quiz on my website that you can take the actor type quiz. And it's important because your point is so true, Ed. A lot of times, and it doesn't really matter what we think we are in a way. It matters how we are perceived. And that's why when I really work with people and when I go on to explain past the actor types in the book is all of the body language, the vocal tone, all of the things that go into how your presence is received. And people will believe what they see, not what you think you're communicating. And so it's very important to know what you align yourself to. However, if that's not coming across in the way that you present yourself, it doesn't matter what you think. It matters what people think of you when they look at you, when they interact with you. So when you take the quiz on my site, it's very important to be as honest as possible when you do it, because oftentimes we will answer a quiz in the way that we want people to think about us. But really think about it. What do people say about you after they get to know you for a while? What do people say they thought of your first impression? That's what I really want to get at.
So this all is based upon branding, if you will, or how do you want to be perceived, not how you are. But on the other hand, authenticity is in.
Exactly.
Right? So,
exactly.
How do you deal with a problem person like me?
You're not a problem person. Yeah, often it has to go hand in hand, and that's what I'm so passionate about. It's like, yes, it is about branding, but it's got to be branding with the core of who you are. Some people have this piece of coal inside of them, and what I do is I polish and I find out and hone it to find out where that core strength and what your actor type is most effective. Some people have a more polished diamond and we polish it more brightly. Some people may have the wrong gemstone and they're not self-aware, and then that's one of the things that we then need to say, okay, this is how you're being perceived. I was working with a client yesterday, a brand new client. And after videotaping him and talking to him, I was able to get him to see how he was being perceived, which is different than how he thought he was coming out.
Well, that could be a shocker for some people.
It is, but it's inviting in a way, because you want to, hopefully your ideal is to communicate, is to connect. And if there is something, one of my favorite quotes is Ralph Waldo Emerson, and he said, "What you do speaks so loud, I cannot hear what you say." And I take that to mean it's like we are often doing things that are so distracting that the actual great content that you may be helping to deliver or wanting to deliver is not coming across, because the listener is being distracted by something that you're doing. And sometimes what that something that you're doing is not being authentic, is not really aligned to your core values.
Let's get into the actor types.
Most people's first question is, can you be more than one actor type? And the answer is definitely yes. Most of the time we are a combination. Sometimes we will bring out one actor type in one situation and another in another situation. That's what leads to combination. But at your core, what I call is your default actor type. And that default actor type is what happens to you under stress or in a stressful or new situation. For example, like one of the things about me is that I grew up being extremely shy. So sorry that was my
hard to believe. I'm sorry.
I know.
Hard to believe.
I know. I'm so unfortunate. Now I actually called my mother recently to get her to send me some of my report cards or some of the some situations, because people are not believing me anymore. And I was really happy that one of my mother's friends is one of my friends on Facebook. And recently she pointed out, she said, "I can't believe you're doing what you're doing when you never spoke as a child." You know, so it was one of those things that's how shy I was. And so I still have that as a default sometimes. Like if I'm around my family, I can default to that. In a crowd sometimes, I can default to that. You know, that ingenue who is just really closed off and shy. But what I've learned to do, and that's why I really love neuroscience and the neuroscience and studying that and using that in a lot of my work, because what I realized is that the more I acted as a teenager or a child, I acted and acted and acted, what happens is I started to reprogram my brain so that the pathway to somebody who appears confident and exciting and enthusiastic and dynamic, that got worn in a direction that I can now go in that direction. And my ingenue, my shy person, that pathway got a little covered over with weeds. So I don't go there as often as I used to. So when you have that ingenue personality, if it's working for you, the ingenue is one of the more difficult ones, because most people will think that they're not bright or walk over them or think that they're young. And a lot of ingenues carry that quality over many, many decades. So you can have a 65-year-old ingenue. And so what I do is like, but the beauty of the ingenue, what makes an ingenue, is that optimism, that open-eyed innocence, that willingness to question. All of those things are what makes those are the strengths of the ingenue. So if you take those strengths and then put a voice on it that is more like a hero, you know, be able to use your diaphragm to speak, use a really strong body language when you speak, and keep those ingenue qualities, that's when you're golden. So it's not about like, what I don't want people to think is that knowing your type then says gives you an excuse to behave badly or ineffectively. What it does is it gives you knowledge so that then, and knowledge is power, then you can say, okay, you know what, I need to adopt a trait from another quality in order to be effective in this situation.
So what's your website?
My website is www.speaketc.com. That's speaketc.com. And you can go on that site, click the button that says take the actor type quiz. It'll spit you out a reading of your top quality and your subsequent other qualities that you also contain.
So is it a 9-minute quiz, 20-minute quiz, 5-minute
quiz? It's a very
brief
quiz. It takes about 9 minutes or 9 questions. It's very short. What I'd love people to do is really, like I said before, make sure that you are answering it correct, honestly. Maybe even have other people take it for you. That would be a really fun thing to do. It could take 5 minutes or less.
Okay, so now let's talk about how people are, you know, a lot of people don't want to speak in front of a group.
Right.
Or they'll speak in front of people who are in the same genre or work group, but you get them to come to a conference, a business conference, they panic.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's because they don't have media training, that's for sure, but it goes deeper. So you have to take people who want to learn this kind
mm-hmm.
of thing, right?
Right. Yeah, you want to take people that want to learn, and one of the things that I do is I reframe it for people. And if they have something to share, most of the fear of public speaking comes from fear of being vulnerable, fear of being exposed. You know, it's like it still ranks over death in the list of top fears. And it's that exposure. And exposure means that you're being seen naked, and that means everybody is looking at you, so you feel very vulnerable. Okay, that makes perfect sense to be afraid of that. Who wants that? However, one of the things that I tell people is that you need to reframe it. If you have something to give to somebody, if you have something to share, that's your duty to share it. If you are then on that stage thinking about what those people are thinking of you, your main purpose is not to share. Your main purpose is to have an effect on those people or being judged. So what I'd like to do and what I talk about in my book is turn the camera around. When we're on stage and we're so nervous and we're so afraid of public speaking, that means that the camera, you've focused your camera on you, and you're like looking at yourself, and you're wondering if you're good enough, you're wondering if you're cute enough, you're wondering if you know the content or confident enough. What I say is turn that camera back on the audience and wonder, how are they being helped? How can I help them? Are they really getting my message? Can they walk out of here different than they were when they stepped in here? That's where the focus needs to be. And when you focus on that, a lot of times that will take care of the nerves and the fear and all of that. And if you go into a situation thinking that it's a situation in which I'm going to be judged, yeah, you're going to be in big trouble. But if you go into a situation saying this is a situation where I'm going to share and help, that's a whole different scenario.
So let's talk about a couple of things here. Let's look at Barack Obama for a minute,
mm-hmm.
okay? This is not a political thing here. It's
right,
just
right, right.
The style seems to be extremely comfortable talking in front of the public without going into campaign mode. He seems to have it together. So this is like speaking like a politician. Not everybody wants to do that, but some people mm-hmm. would like to. So there's a whole head, isn't there, on how to act or how to talk about an issue.
You know, I'm conflicted there because there's the political head, and to be perfectly honest, I have some notes for Barack Obama, which I'm waiting for him to call so I can give them to him. but he can be an excellent public speaker, and at times he can drive me crazy. And I'll tell you why, and that is an evocal pattern. There are certain speeches that Barack will do that he drops into this pattern way of speaking that is extremely predictable. And whenever that happens, and it's a political speak, it's not even the preacher speak, which is almost easier to listen to, but it's a speech that has a certain rhythm, and then you know exactly where the next rhythm is for the next sentence. I can't even sustain it myself. So when he does that, what happens is we start to listen to the rhythm and we stop listening to the words.
Uh-huh.
And I feel as though if he were to break that up, and he only does it in certain instances, so I haven't watched enough because I have a low tolerance for politics, but in certain instances he can be brilliant. Like, and when you watch his Democratic speech back in 2008,
yeah.
That was brilliant. Was
that
great. Was very connected. It was brilliant. And at sometimes when he's under pressure, he'll go into that pattern rhythm that is that whole Polito speak. Now, as a contrast, the difference is in Clinton's style. Clinton's style is so incredibly wonderful because he knows how to keep it authentic and also get his points across and sound strong. And even though he may be faking some of that authenticism,
authenticness, a lot of syllables.
I don't think that he is faking it, but even if he were, he's very, very good at it, of being in the moment and being present and not giving a speech. So I really feel that, yes, you're right, that there are these ways of being a political speaker, and there are coaches that will teach you how to be political. And that's why I'm so passionate about the actor types, because I feel like you need to be you in that kind of a situation. Now, one of the issues with Barack, I think, is that he would lean more towards the whiz kid type, and the whiz kid are very data-driven, and, I mean, he's definitely a hero, but there's a bit of a whiz kid in him. And so he gets caught in between those two styles of giving you lots and lots of information or just being inspirational. And when he has information to give, he slips into this robotic mode that is not as authentic or as engaging to me as a natural hero quality.
So then Bill Clinton would get into it as a buddy and then go to a serious.
Exactly. He's a definite dyed-in-the-wool buddy, and he uses that quality to extreme effect, and then when he needs to borrow something from the hero, he can do that quick shift and just get a little bit more intense, and he still is able to maintain that buddy quality, but still be very authoritative.
Now, in terms of a business person like me, okay, we don't want to come across as phony.
Right.
You know, because when you think of actor types, you think of
lying. Yeah, that's a big fear,
You know, trying to fake someone out.
Right.
So especially when it comes to a job interview or when you're making a presentation in a boardroom to big money people, I mean, you got to know your stuff. So you got to be a whiz kid, but you're relating to people there. What's the way to go on that?
Yeah. Here's the thing. Shakespeare's had it right. All the world's a stage. So when people say, I don't want to act, you are missing the fact that you are acting every single day of your life. Every time you interact with somebody, most of us will do it a little slightly different depending on who it is that we're talking to and what it is that we want to achieve. So when we start putting a name on it, then it starts to feel fake. What I like to think about it is, it's like I'd like to give you a toolbox, and you can pull out whatever tool is effective for this given situation. And just like you would not show up for that board meeting in a pair of cutoff jeans and a T-shirt, you wouldn't show up in that board meeting not without the character or the type or the strengths that are going to make you more effective to deliver that information. So when you think about it as a tool that can be utilized and needed for effectiveness, because what you're doing is you're helping the listener process the information that you need to share with them. So it's not about being fake. It's still an addition of continually trying to help another person get the information that they need. And sometimes the way that you need to help them get it is to create or embody a type or a style that is going to make it easier for them to digest it. You know, you're not going to give a baby a T-bone steak. You are going to give them the food that they need. And that's where we all need to adjust our style sometimes in order to make the content digestible.
So your book, Standing Ovation Presentations, this is like a textbook, isn't it?
Yes, it can be a textbook. Somebody has said that it's like a primer for presentations because it starts with all of the information about the actor types, which is fun and enlightening, but then I go into a step-by-step outline of how to create an engaging presentation, which can then be interpreted into any kind of communication, your elevator pitch, your interview skills. All of that information is in there, plus the do's and don'ts, the fatal flaws of how things work, questions that happen. I call it the blooper reel, like what could go wrong, answering questions about the blooper. The whole book is an analogy, metaphor for the whole entertainment industry because I spent so many years as an actor, so many years as a professional writer for television and film, and I combine all of that to create an easy-to-read, easy-to-digest primer textbook on how you can elevate the way that you communicate.
So about the rain in Spain falls mainly in the plain. So some people have a speech impediment and some people just don't want to do it but know that they should. How do you talk to people about articulation? I mean, is this a big problem?
Yeah, it can be a big problem. I've actually had a company hire me, several companies hire me specifically for individuals who have that issue. And because I've spent years teaching English as a second language, which is how I fell in love with public speaking. And in those situations, I had to do a lot of accent reduction exercises and examples. So what I do is I really hone in and I listen to the way that people articulate. I find a way to explain to them. It gets very technical and very difficult, but I will help them figure out where their tongue needs to be, where their lips need to be, give them exercises and drills. It's just like going to the gym. You go to the gym, you lift this 5-pound weight all the time, and your muscle gets more acclimated to lifting a 5-pound weight. I give drills around specific issues that they may have with a particular consonant or a particular vowel so that they get it in their mouth and get it over and over and over again. Because articulation is in vocal quality is one of the first things that people are going to judge you on. And yes, people will judge you on your visual, your vocal, before they believe any of the words that are coming out of your mouth. That's the way you can fight it, you can argue with it, you can complain about it, but the fact is our brains are wired to do that. So you could either like it or leave it.
On page 166 in your book, it's subtitled, Your Sound is Music, really the sound of music. Your sound is music, stress, pitch, and intonation. And then you go into several examples in the following pages under subtitle Voice Production Skill Builders, and then you go into different types. For instance, on page 180, you call it Stage Door, Catherine Hepburn. And there's a couple of sentences in there. So what is this about? Is this elocution or is this just actualization or visualization or what?
Right. It's a huge combination. It's a very effective tool that I use on almost all of my clients and in workshops. I have a list of very specific monologues, I could say, from movies or films or some other types, and they are all in the book. And I have people work on those for various reasons. One, they can work on their articulation there. Second, they can work on the tone and how to incorporate pauses into where do you pause. What focus words are the most important parts of that sentence so that you can learn how to emphasize, because a lot of people have this monotoneness going on that they don't know how to get any passion into the way that they speak. So that is used for that, so you can figure out what is the focus word here, what words are you going to stress, where are you going to pause in a sentence, how are you going to pause for an effect, are you going to go louder here? And it also combats these tonal things that happen, like upspeaking, where everything sounds like a question. And what the speeches that I've chosen are all very emotional. So they have a deep emotional content. So what also happens is I really strive and push until the person can emulate that emotion that's coming from those other people's words in their own style, so that they will take Katharine Hepburn and they will use the emotions that they own to use that speech. In doing that, just like I said about the neural pathways, the more you do that, and I've had extreme success with that, mostly with the Michael Douglas greed speech, getting an ingenue to do Michael Douglas is going to inform that person that, you know what, I can have righteous anger. I can do that, and it feels okay. No one died. No one passed out. No one arrested me. And what happens is you start to feel where the hero lives in you or where the villain might live in you, and then you can readily access it when need be.
Fascinating. Now, on page 179, there's a section called Staying in Character. Now, this means what?
Yeah, so staying in character means that you want to be consistent, I believe I referred to this before. The consistency is what's key. For instance, one of the examples that I always give is Meryl Streep, because she can do so many different characters. And her natural default character is the buddy. But if she were to go in the middle of Devil Wears Prada and bring some of her buddiness there, everybody would stop.
Yeah.
And nobody, you know, the director would yell cut, and it was like, what's going on here? It's not going to work. So when you have a strength that really works for you, and you're on stage and you're in the middle of the delivery, if you break that character, people are going to mistrust you. Even if it's a villain, you don't want to be consistent, because trust is high.
Right. So it's no longer authentic.
Right. Exactly. And it confuses people. And when people are confused, they don't know what to do with that confusion, and it goes negative, and they turn off.
So this is the training that you do as a coach consultant for industry.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fascinating. This has been a great conversation, and I really thank you very much for being my special guest today. So in closing, standing ovation presentations and how to determine your own actor type, that goes a long way towards job interviews and talking with higher up, for instance, in the company,
right,
or in making a pitch to the boardroom, because it really goes to representation of an idea and deliverable,
right,
on something that needs to get done.
Yes. It's all about communicating, I would say. Because one of my taglines is, talk is cheap, communication is priceless. And so when you think about communication, it's the nonverbal plus the verbal. And the nonverbal is often 90% more important than the verbal. So I always want to talk about communicating rather than speaking or talking, because it's such a holistic thing.
We've been talking with Robin Hatcher, speaker, coach, author. It's all about talk is cheap, communication is priceless. There's a book called Standing Ovations, and the website is speaketc.com. Robin Hatcher, thank you so much for being my special guest on Global Radio Talk Show. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, audience. This is Ed Cohen signing off from Old Town in San Diego.
Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful